What if we could reimagine the traditional notion of a high flyer? Hey friends, welcome back or welcome to the High Flyers podcast. For the curious ones, where we share diverse experiences in life, not just work, tune in and learn to fly high in your own way, from value creators and problem solvers at all aspects of society. Learn about their sunrise, magic moments, hustle, and so much more to help us all be 1% better every day together. And I'm your host, Vidit Agarwal. What to me is a high flyer in very simplistic terms is anyone who is creating value or is solving a problem and they're being better than they were yesterday. Simple as that. That could be anyone. It could be you're caring for your old parents and you're solving a problem and adding value. Could be you've come back from a life-threatening injury and you are now recreating your life. Could be people like you who've moved countries as well and done it on yourself and sort of taken a chance. Could be people in the business world. Nothing wrong with that. They're the kind of assumption we make when we think of high flyers, CEO and presidents. That's Vidit Agarwal, and this is episode 50. Did I just mention my name? I guess so. For this episode 50, my great friend Taps Matimba took over the hosting duties, and I joined him as the guest. Taps was the first guest in the show, the first believer, really. So this was a nice way to celebrate episode 50. Thank you to the 50 guests that have joined me for a conversation. I've enjoyed sharing your story with the world, broadening my horizons, and becoming a better person along the way. And thank you to the listeners of the show, an audience that now spans from Australia to India to the US and more. This is a big step for me to share some of my story and learnings to date, including my sunrise in India and then Australia, the influence of my parents, painful learnings, how this podcast started, what I've learned along the way, and what's in store ahead. As always, love to hear your thoughts, so please do message me directly on LinkedIn, Instagram, email, wherever you like. Before we go to the episode, I'd leave you with my three key focuses each day to be a little better than yesterday, be a good person, do a good job, and build good relationships. Thank you, and here's to the next 50 episodes. Hey Taps, welcome to the show.
Sorry V. This week we're doing things a little bit differently. You're not the host this week. I am. So I'll start the show.
That's right. That's right.
Well,
thanks for having me on your show.
Thanks for having me again. But I'll do a quick little introduction for the audience to know what's going on. Hi, everyone. I'm Tapiwa from episode one. Today, we're celebrating the podcast's 50th episode. And as a previous guest, I get the chance to flip the script on my beloved friend here and place the host in the hot seat. V, you've had amazing guests on your show, and I'm excited about this episode because the High Flyer audience will get an opportunity to get to know you a bit better. Thanks for having me back, right? Oh, actually, thanks for coming on the show. How are ya?
I must say to the listeners, I am worried. Taps has his tricks, and Taps is going to stitch me up today. So hopefully I've made a good decision by asking him to host me on my podcast. But I'm glad to be here, Taps. Thanks for coming back. But no, seriously, episode one feels like a lifetime ago doing that. And now episode 50, about 15 or so months in. And I can frankly say I'd never imagined I'd get to episode 50. I never even knew what episode 50 would look like. And to be here now is surreal. So yeah, excited to do this with you, and thanks for being on the journey.
Brother, as I said, you know, all the way back then, I'm super proud of you, and you've brought a lot of light into the world, as I knew you would. So I am super stoked for episode 50. We're going to have some fun today, and I'm going to ask you some really piercing questions, hopefully. So we might as well jump into it, hey? What do you say?
Good. Let's go.
Sweet. All right. I'll start off with some icebreakers, eh? So that we can loosen you up and the audience can get to know you a little bit better. So V, how would you describe yourself?
Whoa, that's a very deep icebreaker, Taps. How would I describe myself? I think it sort of evolved how I describe myself. I think where I am at now in life, I think I'm curious. I'm curious about life, curious about myself, curious to challenge myself. I think the podcast is an example of that, challenging myself. I was out of work. It was just backing myself and having a go. Having good relationships, I think that's always been important to me. People like yourself, people, my parents, my family, and just trying to be a good person. I think someone said to me recently, kind of, if you do three things, you're kind of on the right path, which is do a good job every day, have good relationships, and be a good person. And that's something I've learned the hard way, and we can talk about some of those examples in this conversation. But yeah, where I'm at is not where I was a couple of years ago in terms of these thoughts and these sort of understanding of myself and of the world. But yeah, I'm glad that it's turned out the way it's had, and I've learned often the hard way, but glad I've learned. Yeah, and I think someone like you always keeps me in check and has a very wise brain. So yeah, that's a very deep sort of question I don't quite know how to answer, but that's my brief answer.
Well, brother, I told you I was going to throw some curveballs at you, but I love that question and I love your answer, because I wanted to set the scene on things that we're going to delve into a bit deeper as we go along into the episode. I'm lucky enough to have you in my life, and there's a lot of things about your character that I love. So I thought maybe giving the audience a little bit of a summary or a little insight into what we're going to be talking about later would be good. So thanks for the awesome
answer. I need to give you some guidance here, Tippy. Well, the host never explains himself.
Oh, all right.
So ask the question and get all on with it. Okay. The host doesn't explain themselves.
Giving me advice live on air. Fine. All right. I'll take it. I will go into the next question then. This might be a little bit more icebreaker-ish then. So what's your favorite podcast?
I'm a big fan of the Tim Ferriss show. So Tim's been doing his podcast for years. I think it might be almost 7-8 years. A massive fan of that. I think there's a lot of questions that I've actually taken from his podcast that I've used in a different version of my podcast. And just his personality, I think the questions he asks with the level of calmness and understanding of the host and really unpacking people's journeys in life. And I think my podcast or this podcast has been built on a similar ethos. So that's definitely one that I really enjoy. But I'm one of those people, I think maybe when you do a podcast, you sort of go in and out of different podcasts.
Absolutely.
So I was telling someone the other day that what I have to struggle with now is sometimes absorbing the content, because I'm so distracted by what they ask, the tone of their voice, the music they use. How do they do the intro? And I'm picking up those things. So I often have to go back and listen to the podcast as a guest, because I'm often listening as a host myself. So podcasting's, it's become not as fun, because I'm picking up all these clues and I sometimes forget to actually absorb the content.
Yeah, but I think it's also, knowing you and how you always on this journey of continuous improvement. I think that's absolutely you to a T. Like, how can you do things better? So, all right. Love Tim Ferriss as well. So that's great to know. And last one of the icebreakers before we jump into your sunrise. Anything that you've read or seen lately that you'd recommend to the audience?
Yeah, like you say, recently, because that helps. I would probably say James Clear. So a lot of people would have heard of James Clear's book, Atomic Habits, but recently I discovered his website, so jamesclear.com, I think it is, and he's got a treasure trove of content on there. So just before this podcast, I was listening to, he's got this page which we can put in the show notes, is 30 of the best speeches that he's come across on various topics in life and work and everything in between, And that's been amazing. So I was listening to one, I think the subject was This Is Water. And I forget the name of the person who gave that speech, but just interesting thoughts and puts things in perspective. Mm. So that's something I've enjoyed doing recently. And I've become a big fan of just things on the internet. I think the benefit of having algorithms and social media sort of knowing what you absorb is it gives you more of what you what they think you like. So things like Twitter, I'm a massive fan of Twitter, a big kind of observer on Twitter. I don't really initiate much, but I read a lot on Twitter and absorb a lot. And that's been amazing. There's a lot of things that I take from that that I apply to my daily life.
Absolutely. Well, great, man. We'll definitely check out your recommendations. That sounds fascinating. All right. Well, brother, now we're going into your sunrise. And the sunrise essentially is for us to know where your journey started. You know, what's made you, you. So I might start off with this question. Tell us more about Baby V and what life was like as a kid.
So I was born in India. I was born in a place called Calcutta, which is in the eastern part of India. And Baby V, from what I've been, I frankly don't have many memories of my early, very early days, but from what I've been told by my parents is I was fairly easygoing, like nothing particularly bothered me and I was not too fazed by things. The earliest memory I have is of tennis. Like tennis was always my first love. Like I don't know why. I still remember playing tennis before I could even walk, which I doubt is true. But that's my memory, is like playing tennis. Like I remember from the earliest age I used to play tennis just for fun. There was no sort of ambition to play it seriously or anything. We just played for fun. And I think just trying things. I mean, my parents were amazing. I'm still very close to them. And I've got a younger brother who's 4 years younger. And yeah, life was great. I mean, a lot of kind of chance to do different things, try different things, experiment. Academically, I was not great. And I think the reason I was not great is because I lacked focus, very, very honestly. So yeah, that's probably the early start. And yeah, a lot of good memories and a very loving family, very supportive family and a very, and also I think me allowed me to be independent. Like I still remember from an early age being independent in whether it's walking to the shops or playing sport downstairs with all the other kids in the neighborhood or just having my own kind of thoughts. And I think it's amplified now where I kind of walk my own path at times, but that probably comes from my childhood. Yeah.
Great. V, thanks for that insight. Yeah. Ever since, you know, I've known you, you've loved tennis and that's something that you've always kind of been drawn to. I don't know, just touching on, you know, early loves in life. What was it about tennis that drew you in so much?
I don't actually know. It's a really good question. I don't actually know. I guess it was probably a combination of a few things. Now that you ask, probably the environment was a big part of it. So Calcutta and even India, I mean, India's not produced many world-class champion tennis players as such, but there's a big tennis industry there, like tennis courts where I grew up. Within 10 kilometers of my house, there were probably 10 to 15 different tennis courts and sporting clubs. And Calcutta was influenced by the British a lot through there. Calcutta was one of their big posts when they were ruling India. And I think maybe a bit of influence of that, the white shorts and the white tops and playing tennis. But and I think, I don't know, maybe because of it, back to that independent thinking, it allowed me to just kind of express myself maybe because as much as I'm a huge fan of team sports and being part of a team, I think, sometime early on I was very shy. Till the age of at least 14 I was very shy and I struggled to express myself and really share my thoughts in a public setting, and maybe tennis gave me that comfort where you do play in a team sometimes, but often you're on court, you're by yourself, you're versing someone else and it's you versus them. You do have a coach and you travel in a team, but you're playing one-on-one, or you can play doubles, but I played one-on-one. And yeah, I just enjoyed it. I those are probably the only things I can think of now that you ask. But yeah, I don't have a clear reason why it just happened. And obviously, my parents, I think they obviously took me to tennis, and my friends played tennis, and that was a one of the ways we socialize is playing tennis. It got to a point where every time we'd go on a holiday as a family, my present would be a new tennis racket.
I love it.
Like, seriously, till the age of probably 14, every year when we'd go on a holiday, wherever, that would be my present, as a new tennis racket or a new pair of tennis shoes or something to related to tennis. And I still don't know why, because I, looking back, like, I enjoyed it, but I never was dedicated to it, where I was like, okay, I want to be the next Federer, I want to play internationally. I didn't have that dedication, but I just enjoyed it as a passion.
Yeah, it sounds like it was your form of expression, you know, and knowing your mom and knowing how close you guys are, like, I think maybe, you know, that's just, they saw that in you and drew it out. I love that you say you were shy, because seriously, looking at you now, you'd never know. But oh, good. I think
I was very shy.
Oh, interesting. Well, thanks for sharing that with us, V. So that's early V, right? So moving into, so you moved to Australia as a teenager, correct?
Yeah, so we moved to Australia when I was about 11, 12 years old. That was a surprise, frankly. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously when you're that age, you don't really have enough of an understanding of the world, but you have some level of understanding. And as I mentioned earlier, growing up in India, and dad had ran his own business. Mum was sort of the chief mum in the family, and they were very supportive. And we had a nice childhood. Like, we were given everything, but we were never made to feel privileged. But we were given things, we had to work hard for it, but we never felt like we were underappreciated. And we'd go on holidays, and we used to do different lessons and tennis and all that. And I think dad was at a point where he wanted to probably expand his business. So his business was in India, and then a bit of kind of the subcontinent in Bangladesh and a few of the surrounding countries. And I think he wanted to expand. And frankly, I was still to this day, I am surprised that, and now I live in Australia, I've been living here for a long time, and Australia is home. And India is sort of the previous life I used to live almost. But I still remember when we first moved here. So we'd moved in, I now live in Sydney, but we moved to Melbourne and we moved to the western suburbs of Melbourne. Because what mum and dad had done was they had actually come and visited Australia a couple of years before we moved. And they'd scoped out the area, and they'd already bought a residence and things. But obviously when you come as an outsider, you don't really know the suburbs and the schooling and the good parts and the bad parts. So we moved to the west side, and I didn't know much to make an opinion about it, right? But my parents were very clear. So actually within 6 months, we ended up moving to the eastern suburbs, to the southeast suburbs of Knoxfield. So we initially moved to the western suburbs of Werribee because mum and dad had bought a house there for us. But we quickly realized, I think they realized, for me and my brother to have better opportunities, and for them to have better opportunities, the southeast was more opportunistic. And I still remember very clearly a conversation I had with my mum at that point. I was like, we've just moved. I'm going to a new school. I've sort of settled in. Why are we going to move again? And I've done that now through my life, where initially you kind of give up that short-term sweet pill, but long-term you benefit from it. So yeah, it was at that point where I think you're still forming as a human being, but huge props to my parents to make that move. And we didn't really know any people here in Australia, but now, and for a while now, Australia's home. And I can't imagine having lived in India in a different life. So
that's amazing. Absolutely. And you've touched on a point there that I wanted to explore a little bit more. So obviously moving between, you know, two countries, two continents, you know, it's always like, it's a lot of change. And what I've noticed about you and our friendship is you're one of those people who embraces change. You go along with it. So can you walk us through like those experiences, like moving to a new country and having to move again within that new country? How has that shaped you in your attitudes to change, essentially?
I'm not entirely sure, because I can't really recollect many memories from then. And I think as you get older in life, you have more clarity and you think more. I think at that age, you just kind of go with the flow and you don't really take time to reflect or even consider different options. But I think a couple of examples I can think of is when I first moved to Australia and moved to the west of Melbourne. Mm-hmm. All the schools there were either Catholic or Christian, so mm-hmm. at least the good schools there were all, and I don't know why. And we grew up in a Hindu household. I mean, I still remember the principal at school asked my parents, they said, oh, you guys are not Christians, but we go to church and we read the Bible. Mm-hmm. How are you going to fit into this? And my dad, without thinking, said, we believe in one God, whether that's Jesus or a Hindu God or a Muslim mm-hmm. God, we believe in one God, and our mm-hmm. kids should learn different types of study. Mm-hmm. And going back to India, in Calcutta, all the schools are Christian and Catholic, back to the British mm-hmm. influence. So they are Christian and Catholic, but a big mm-hmm. proportion of India is not. Mm-hmm. The people that go there are not Christian and Catholic, mm-hmm. but that's fine. That's mm-hmm. that's kind of taken as a taken for granted. Mm. So that was one example, and I was never meant to feel inferior even early on. I think the benefit is in India, English is your first language. Mm. You taught English from day one, so there was no language barrier at all. Culturally, there was definitely a barrier, even not a barrier, but just adjustment period. Mm. I think the freedom coming into school, I still remember like things like recess and lunch. And maybe because I think you're growing up a little bit, so you're more aware of it. But in India, you sort of, you wouldn't think through it twice because you're just grown up in that culture. Yeah. So everyone goes and plays sport. You can't do similar things. But here you come and just the food options. I still remember like getting the Milo bars and getting the tiny teddies and and the roll-ups and all that. And I was in Disneyland. Mm. I still remember with mom and dad. So I used to hate going to the supermarket. But then I saw all these things they bring back, and I could not wait to go to school the next morning to go to recess and eat those kind of beautiful, delicious snacks that mum would give us to eat. Mm. And I went through a phase where Milo bars were my favorite thing to have, and tiny teddies and all these things. But I think early on I definitely did struggle. Looking back to what I said, I was shy, and I really was shy. And I was in a new environment, right? So didn't really know how to adjust, and I had an Indian accent, which frankly now I couldn't care less, but back then you're that age, you want to fit in, you want to be involved, and that bothered me. But I was never treated differently. I was never made to feel inferior. Actually, funnily enough, recently reconnected with one of the guys I went to school with that I hadn't spoken to in a long time, over 10 years, and we spoke like we were best mates. We spoke for an hour on the phone, and it brought back memories. And then after that, so when we moved to the west, from the west to the southeast, obviously we joined a new school, and that was quite a good school. I think I'm very appreciative to mum and dad that they wanted to invest in my education and send me to a good school. Yeah. And that was an eye opener. It was a school with facilities and kind of very new and fresh and modern, and you could pick your subjects. all these things. I think that was, again, back to freedom. I think when you're in India, you don't really have that freedom to pick, even at that young age. So having that, but I think the thing that I struggled with there was speaking up.
Yeah,
probably a combination of my shyness, but then also culturally in Western society, when you're in school, you can ask questions. You can speak up with no ulterior effects, right? Which I think is changing now in India, but back then it wasn't. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, that's a very long answer to your question, but those are some of the memories and some of the things. But overall, it was great. I didn't have nothing bad happened to me, fortunately, and there was no kind of days where someone else made me feel inferior. I think it was in my own head. Mm. I felt like that.
Yeah.
But I quickly got over it. I think that's the exciting part about moving at that age where you kind of naive in a positive way, where you just don't think through things, you just go and do it. Because now if I'd move and go to school, I'd probably have a million different thoughts and overthink it.
I don't know, man. With the way you quickly adjust to change, I think you would just, because I've had the privilege of observing you in our friendship, and it's just, you know, you do adjust to change very quickly, and you just get on with things. And that's something that I really admire about you. But there's a point I wanted to kind of return to in regards to the lessons that you've learned. So, you know, your parents are amazing. They've always grounded you in really solid lessons, like giving you great foundations. So, you know, that distinct memory that you have of your dad saying, look, my child is going to learn to us, it's one God. We don't have any differentiations. My question around that was, who were your main influences growing up? And what are the biggest lessons that, you know, they imparted on you? What lessons have you ingrained from them within yourself that have helped you to be the person you are now?
Definitely influences were parents, both mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And I think both gave me different learnings, but they both kind of connect with each other. So dad, and he never believes this when I say this to him, he's been my biggest inspiration and he continues to. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of things I've done is because he showed me how he could do it. So he finished high school with very average marks and frankly, no one believed in him. But fast forward and he ended up running the family business and became very successful at it. So I think that taught me, and I think I've realized this more late in my later years. I think early on, back to what I said earlier, when they're in that age, at least when I was at that age, you don't really, these things don't really stick. They're just part of life, right? You're like, yeah, dad, he runs his own business. He does his things. We do these things. You don't question it. I think the person I am now, I wasn't at that age. I was just coasting along with life. But I think getting that from him, that back yourself and believe in yourself and the world, might not believe in you, but if you can kind of do the best you can every day, things can work out. I think that's something that's always stuck with me and working hard. Mm. He's always said it, do the right thing. I mean, I know it sounds cliche and everyone says it, but he truly did and always do the right thing. I still remember I have this strange memory one time, and I must have been 8 or 9 years old, and we were in a shop somewhere and buying things. And being a kid, I picked up one of the things and put it in my pocket, and I got in the car. And I'm like, look, mom and dad, I got this thing. And they're like, where did you get that from? We didn't pay for it. And I was like, oh, I just took it. I want it. They said, no, go back in the shop, put it back in, apologize, and then come back. And it's a random memory that I just remember now while thinking of that. So those are two things from dad. From mum, I think positivity, I mean, she is just, despite the number of challenges they've been through, just a very positive person, someone who really makes you believe in yourself. And frankly, she believed in me. I alluded earlier to my academic averageness and being fairly, honestly, very average in school. She believed in me. I think when no one else did, even my teachers didn't, she did. She said, if it puts his mind to something, he can do it, and let him try. If he's not a booky sort of person, maybe he's a practical person, or maybe he can do other things. So let him try, and let's give him a shot, and let's support him. So I think she always gave me that belief, and I think she's always been very grounded and very not cynical at all. I think that comes from her parents and my grandparents, and I love them to bits. They're both fit and healthy and in their later years, but just abundance of positivity. And I mean, sure, you have days where you're off, but just believe. And one thing mom always says is like, tell the universe. Mm. She's like, if you want something, kind of tell the universe and maybe it'll happen. Mm. And I think, they were massive influences. And I think I mentioned earlier moving to Australia. I've taken some risks in my life, as you mentioned, but that risk to take with two kids who are very, very young in a new environment, a new culture with frankly no real support. Yeah. I told dad the other day, I'm like, that is true bravery. Mm. That is what he called having a go, taking a risk. Yeah. The things I've done are kind of minuscule compared to that. So I think when you look at those things, those influences, I just really appreciative. And I mean, the other one would be my parents never, like, I mean, I always tell mom and dad, I'm like, dad did really well for himself and gave us a really good life in India and in Australia. But I never felt like that. I never felt like life was good because dad, back to what I said earlier, I'm working hard and doing your best. And because I was not academically great, they never let me go because of that. They were like, nope, you've got to find something, work, try. And that, I think, that always stood out. And I think now I'm seeing the benefits of that, about the process and the hard work and kind of putting in your best and being positive. I think now after a long time. It's sort of maybe finally sticking. So
no, man, you are the embodiment of your parents, and I think, you know, definitely know that they're proud of you, because mate, we all are. Sorry, it's a bit of a puff piece. I don't get to get on the air a lot, so I'm just going to be talking you up and telling the world how you are. Thanks for sharing that, V. That's really lovely. What else I wanted to find out from you as well is, you know, I'm lucky to call you a brother in the truest sense of the word, right? And we have incredible friends. And what I like about like our friendship group is we provide like a safe space to talk about anything from politics, how you see the world, what we're struggling with the most, you know, and that open-mindedness of yours always shines through. I was wondering, how have your friendships enriched your life?
Oh, that's a great question. I've never really thought of that per se. So it circles back to things that I said earlier, right? Mm. So the shyness that I had, which was a lot stronger than it is now, but an introvert. I mean, I still like to think I'm an introvert. I think people close to me don't quite agree with me, but I still like to think I am. And anyways, I think that those two kind of things have still stuck with me, and the way they have is, I think early on, I used to try and fit in and try and be someone I was not, because back to me being shy and being introverted. And frankly, I was always in high school, I was always the average kid, right? I was never the kid that was the go-to for something or was really good at something. I was like, oh yeah, he has the best parties, or he's the best at maths, or he's the best at tennis. I didn't have any of that. I was the average kid, so I kind of fit in the middle. Mm. And friends to me, and I think back to what I said about being independent. Mm. Yeah, I always connected to people that connected with me. I never felt the need to, like, I was never a loner. Mm. I had people around me. So I think that's always been something that just by coincidence has happened. Mm. I think in terms of friendships, I think the last 5-6 years, I mean, we've known each other now for I think 6-7 years. Mm. But since then, I think I, and this friendship group that you alluded to, the six of us in this group, and then some of my other friends who are equally as close with me, I think what I've learned, not learned, but what just happened through kind of coincidences, these people get me for who I am. Mm. And I think I get them. And I remember I went through a period in 2012, 13, where I was part of a friendship group where there's a lot of drama and a lot of angst. And I think there's a line that people say that you meet someone, and if you get energy from it, then you enjoy being around them. But if you meet them and you leave and you feel drained, then clearly something's not right. Mm. And I think, I think more recently, I think that energy's there, and that's been important to me. And I think more recently, it's probably happened through conversation. Like now that I live in Sydney, I've been here for 2 years. Mm. Something I might have read is the difference between where you grow up and the friends you have versus where you move is when you move, your friends actually based on your interests and based on your choices. Mm. Whereas when you grow up somewhere, your friends are based on your environment. Mm. So if you grow up in suburb X, your friends are just school X. Your friends are actually based on the school and suburb just because through effects of environment. But when you move, and I think the other byproduct of moving is you only make an effort for the friends you like and want to keep in touch with, because you probably don't see them in person as much. I think you guys, we, for listeners wondering, we call ourselves the Run Club because we did the full marathon a couple of years ago, and then I feel we're closer than we were before. I mean, you're based in Tassie, I'm based in Sydney, and then some of the other guys are based in Melbourne, or one's now based in the US. And I think we're closer than we ever were, at least I like to think we are. Yeah, and I put in the effort. Yeah. And back to what I said earlier around friends being important, family being important, my health being important, I put in the effort. I always believe in that, as putting in the effort. Yeah. And I think that's one thing you'll realize about me. If I like you, I'll put in the effort and keep in touch. If I don't, then things will just fizzle out.
And the other thing as well, you know, you've alluded on this to this point around, you know, people giving you energy and you know, you're with the right people if you feel enriched and, you know, paraphrasing, and also loved with them, right? We've had pretty vulnerable moments within our friendship group. And what advice would you give people out there in regards to cultivating healthy friendships?
That's a big question, Tapson. Frankly, I don't think I'm qualified enough to be answering this question, but I'll try.
It's within like your experience, right? Because you've got a really beautiful way of approaching relationships. You've just stated, you know, and this I can vouch is true. You put in a lot of effort with the people that you care about, and that's one aspect, right? But how would you explain cultivating really good friendships or healthy ones, you know, in your perspective to the audience?
Probably is just not forcing it. I think if there's a very simple tagline that I've learned the hard way, is not forcing it. And that's applies to friendships, relationships, whether it's with your partner, could be someone at work, could be professional friendships, podcast, anything, right? Just not forcing it. I think and being yourself, I think that's something I mentioned earlier, where I tried to be someone else and try to fit in. I've learned just be yourself, because if you be yourself, people that you attract will be people that like you for who you are, not putting on a face sometimes. And I think something I learned recently, I had a lady called Holly Ransom on the show, and just fascinating insights. And one of the things she said, and this is probably not friendships, but more generally around connecting with others, she said, if you're going to talk to someone, you're going to reach out to someone, do it with a particular intent, and do it, like, for example, if you have a professional mentor that you speak to and you catch up with them every 3 months or whatever cadence, reach out with a specific question that they can help you with or what value they can provide. But if you just want to catch up and talk about the footy or talk about the weekend, you're not getting the best use of that relationship. Then you're probably better off speaking to a friend or speaking to your partner or something about it. And I think that's the difference. I think, and I see it now with the podcast where people reach out to me and they just want to have a coffee or they just want to have a beer. And I've done this as well, the wrong ways. Eventually the person will say, okay, what do you want to catch up with me for? Well, like, everyone's time is valuable and you want to make it feel valuable. I think the other one also is probably let people be who they are. I think don't let them be different. I think we've seen that in our group. We've all got different personalities. Benefits and sort of pros and cons to each of ourselves, and take people who they are. Like, I mean, one of our friends, I won't name him, but he's someone who's great sometimes, but then sometimes he wants his own space. And that I've learned through time, and that's fine. It's not him saying, he's not a reflection of me. He's just how he is and what keeps him going. People with me probably will say, oh, sometimes you come across as too much. You want to talk, or you want to share this, or you want to have tones. And I'm like, that's fine. There's a balance to that. So I think that's probably the other one, is think it through from their shoes. But I think, keep it simple. Don't overcomplicate it. The best friendships are the ones that are simple and they work. You don't want to make it into a chore and an activity and feel like it's work.
I really do love that response, because it's really good learnings, and it's actionable things. And thanks for sharing your perspective. I'm going to have fun asking you really, really tough questions today. So just brace yourself. So in terms of Sunrise, you know, I love that we've covered young V, you know, V up until now, and your approach to relationships and how you see the world from that perspective. I'm interested in moving into this next segment, which is your magic moments. I've been witness to some really amazing moments in your life, that I'm pretty privileged about. But from your perspective, I was wondering if you could choose two magic moments. You could either choose one that's professional, but I want one that's personal. That's your only choice for the second one, is either professional or personal. But I want a personal, magic moment that you think has fortified your character, something that's forged you through the fire and you've come out of the other side a better version of yourself. So yeah, take it away, V.
Sure. There's one that definitely stands out. It's a work-related moment, but there's a lot of things from that that I've applied to my life, and it connects back to a lot of the things we've just spoken about. So I, to give some very quick context, I went to uni and I did a Bachelor of Commerce, pretty standard, and post that I got an internship at Coles. So for listeners wondering, Coles is one of Australia's largest kind of retail businesses across supermarkets, alcohol, convenience, based in Melbourne. Big office, lots of energy, lots of people, thousands of people. It was an internship that was 2 days a week. So I was studying full-time and working, sort of you could call it part-time, and it was a 12-month internship. And it was in marketing. And I didn't really know much about marketing. I'd applied for merchandise, which is their buying team that decides what products get sold in their stores, but they didn't have a spot there. They said, you want to take marketing? And I said, yeah, sure, I'd love to learn learn any function. I'll give it a go. So, yeah, long story short, got into marketing, got the role, internship, and then the intention was after the internship, you apply for the graduate program. And it was a two-year graduate program. At that point, Coles was one of the best graduate programs, and I think they still are. Very practical, very high responsibility, high access to leaders. You can really learn in 2 years. You do rotations through four teams, 6 months each. So mid-year through that, and this was in 2014. So mid-year through that, I'd apply for the graduate positions. And I was in marketing, so I just did one plus one. Yeah, I'll apply for marketing graduate program because I'm in marketing. Just makes sense. Why? Don't know. No reason, no clear understanding of marketing. But yeah, I'll apply marketing, you know, just comfort, easy, relatable. So applied marketing, didn't get it. Feedback was, you're not showing us the passion. We're not sure why you're doing marketing. You should go become a store manager. Very clear feedback I'd got. And I think this was one of those moments where we talked earlier about people and relationships and mum's example of the universe. The head of HR in that team, Paul Hopkins, he was one of my first mentors. So there's two ways of giving bad news, right? One way is you send an email or just have a quick meeting and say, hey, sorry, I didn't get the role. Sorry, bad luck. All the best. Keep in touch. Done. The other way is you say, no, I'm actually going to, you know, let's catch up. Let's go into a room and let's work through this. Let's see what the options are. And he said, I still remember it was a five-story building. So he said, let's go upstairs to one of the rooms, and all the HR rooms upstairs. And I knew that's probably bad news that I didn't get the role. But he took me aside and sat me down and he said, look, you didn't get the role, but I think you have potential. I think you can contribute to this company, and I think you can stay here longer than your internship. Why don't you look through all the functions? And the grad program was across every function you could think of. So he said, why don't you look through that? And the way Coles did it was they had a HR manager for each function and a functional sponsor. So the sponsor and the HR manager were the two decision makers on who became the grad in that function, and they had about five grads per function. And about, out of the interns, I think it was about 20 interns, and maybe 10 of those interns were going to get grad positions and 10 were just going to go work somewhere else because they wanted to move industry or whatever. And he said, do that. He said, just put together a list. And I said, great, I'll put it down. And I shortlisted it down to central operations and merchandise, like I said before, that buying team, those were my two. And then I started having coffees. And this was the first time I started having coffees, and you asked about relationships and connecting with people. It was because of him, because he gave me the belief and the confidence and frankly showed me this third door, as they call it, that if you show people who you are outside of a resume and outside of an application process, people might value you for you, not just how you convey yourself in an interview, right? And that was a huge moment. It was a painful moment at that time getting that no. And I think also just because I'm naive, I just believed in myself. No, I don't know why, what it was. I could have easily packed up and gone, you know what, the world hates me, life's over, and just do that, but I didn't. And it was probably because of him, frankly. And I started having those coffees, and there was an intimidating environment. So Coles had a cafeteria in the middle of the office, and the whole office was kind of open. People always, noises, and I was like, This kid who's still just finishing uni. And I said, I'll just have it. I put myself out there. And I reached out to the two people in Central Ops, and they they really liked me. They said, look, this guy had a no. He's trying to turn the no into a yes. Mm. He's making an effort. Mm. And a month later, I got a phone call saying, we'd like to offer you a graduate position. Right? And that to me was, I mean, it probably wasn't magic, but it was a magical moment in that it really gave me a lot of belief in myself. Mm. And to turn a no into a yes in a big company like that, and to have someone like Paul believe in me, really set the seeds for a lot of things I've done since then in terms of reaching out to people and not taking no for an answer. Mm. Like, frankly, a no now is something I don't even process. I'm like, whatever, I'll find a way to either learn from that, or I'll turn that no into a yes. Mm. It was because of that moment. And then I went on to work for another 2 years at Coles and learned so much about life, about people, about relationships, about obviously about work, and had some of the most amazing people that I was able to learn from and get coaching from at all levels of the company, including some of the directors, back to that belief around just reach out and people might help you. And that's a moment that really sticks out. It's a long time ago now, but it sticks out. It was a very, very painful moment in the moment, but after that and in reflection, so much learned. And I think for anyone wanting to apply that, I think don't let a no be a no. Try and turn that, or try and learn from that. And and I can't take all the credit for it. I think people like Paul and obviously the business as well, having the culture to want to give someone a second chance, I think was something that let me flourish. If they felt like they said, you've given a no, you can't apply again, I think that would have limited me. But I think being fortunate to be in that space, that was one that stands out.
That's absolutely great. And it's, and you know, like, this is what I love about learning stories, and why I love this podcast so much, and also getting the opportunity for you to share your thoughts to the audience as well, because that's very powerful and it's very actionable. So part of the deal was you could choose one. So you've chosen career. Now we want to know the personal part. What's happened in your personal part in your life that's forged you into the person that you are now?
Yeah, I mean, that one, I think I know as much as it's about work, I think there's a lot of personal things that I apply today. Personal one, I mean, I think starting this podcast, frankly, I mean, that was actually not work related at all. I mean, a lot of people ask me what made me started, and I was at a startup and COVID had just come into the world, and unfortunately I was one of the many of the company that was laid off, and I didn't know what I was going to do, and the world was uncertain. And thinking back to some of the things I mentioned earlier is having a go and just taking a chance. I started this podcast, and it was in May, June 2020 that I started it with, frankly, no grand plan. I reached out to you. I reached out to five, I think, other people that I knew, and all six of you said yes, and believed in me. And I had a bit of a idea in terms of the name and the structure. Like, the structure has been the same from day dot around the Sunrise Magic Moments Hustle thing. But honestly, it's changed my life. It's broadened my views on so many things. It's made me, because the one thing I mentioned earlier about uni and starting work, I used to see people that were senior, and I used to always just think they're born that way, or they are just successful. They don't fall. They don't have knocks. They're successful. And I think that was another impetus to start the podcast, was to really go beneath the surface about people's lives and to go, what makes people who they are and in any facet of life. Yeah. And I think the learning through that has been is there is no silver bullet to it. I think it's those things that I said that my dad taught me earlier. Frankly, as strange as it sounds, that's what makes people achieve what they're doing. And I think a lot of people also have had a lot of adversity through their life. And they've decided not to accept that adversity, but to go, I'm going to learn from it and I'm going to be a better person because of it. And I think learning about myself, like I mentioned to you and I mentioned a few others, like things like tone, things like voice, things like the words to use, discipline, putting out an episode. Initially, it was every fortnight. Then I started doing every week. And it's an accountability to myself. Yeah. Like if I don't release an episode, it's very rare that someone will follow me up and ask, why haven't you released it? But it's an accountability to myself to go, I've given this person a commitment that I'm going to release it on this day. And I'm going to follow through with it. If it means I need to be up at midnight and not go to a party, and so be it. I've got to put it out.
Yeah.
And then another one I want to really say here, which is important, is I, for the longest period, used to be very conscious of my voice. I still am. And when I started doing the podcast, a few people reached out to me and said, you've got a voice for this. You just sound great. And I thought they were just saying it to give me confidence because it was early on. And I'm like, yeah, they need to say something nice. So they'll just say that. And I still get it even 49, 50 episodes in. And for the longest period, and maybe that connects back to some of my shyness. Maybe that's why I was shy because I didn't feel like I should speak up because I was like, oh, does my voice sound okay? And who knows, maybe that goes back to the cultural stuff around moving countries and your, when you're at that age, your accent is sort of developing as well. And I mean, now anyone sees me, they go, yeah, you're Australian, you sound Australian. And so that's probably been a huge kind of byproduct of the podcast is just believing in my voice, which sounds so silly. But yeah, I mean, that's been another one. So that's definitely a magic moment in life that is something I just glad that I pressed that button and started that podcast. And frankly, it was mum again who gave me that inspiration. She said, just do it. What's the worst that can happen if it doesn't work out? Stop doing it.
So
that was a big one.
That's great. And it's a perfect segue into the next episode. The next part of the episode, which is the podcast itself, man. Like it is, I really want to explore that a bit more because episode 50, man, it's just amazing. I've seen the journey. I've seen, you slowly get your confidence up, like just, you know, and get into it. And, you know, you took to it like a, like a duck to water or something. Like you just did amazingly. So I'm so proud of you, of where you started and where you are now. I can't say that I'm surprised that we're at episode 50. And for me, like one of the things that put a massive smile on my face was seeing that you'd cracked top 20 podcasts in one of the largest markets on earth, India, and also in Hong Kong. Like, I mean, that's amazing. So where I'm leading with this is the question of, can you elaborate what your vision of the show and what you hope to achieve now, 50, you know, you're 50 episodes in. Has that vision become a lot clearer for you? What does that look like?
Yeah, thank you, firstly. I mean, a lot of these accolades are something that I didn't expect. And even now I sort of scratch my head. And I think a lot of it goes down to the guests, right? The India one particularly, I've had three guests now, one who lives in India, one who has Indian influences, and one who's done a lot of business with India. And I think that helps with just getting that recognition when that connection's there. So super grateful and nice validation that something's working. In terms of where I want to take it. So one of the things that I'm in the midst of, and I've sort of publicly started announcing it, is Curiosity Center. So still going to continue this podcast, and this podcast will be in the same format and have episodes and do it till we get to the moon. But Curiosity Center, so one of the things that I have appreciated through this podcast is, as you said, 50 guests, 50 episodes, that's 50 kind of hubs of content. And because my podcast has been industry and journey agnostic, there's a lot of diversity and experiences there that can be shared with groups of people in business, in university, early in life, or people wanting to make a change in life, or people just driven by curiosity. So that's where the name Curiosity Center comes from. And the vision there is really, I think eventually I want to get to a point where that can be kind of the melting pot of the hub for young people to come and do three things. So one, have live events where we either use the guests that have already been on the podcast or bring on new people and have panel or one-on-one sessions with 20 to 30 students at the most in one live event in a sort of limited capacity and really make it interactive and focused on a particular topic, but link the things I mentioned earlier around education, but then also relationship building. So I think one of the things that I have observed through doing the podcast and just through conversation is particularly for young people today, when I say young people, I mean high school students and university students, the world is your oyster. There's so many opportunities, but you sort of want to understand those opportunities a bit better beyond LinkedIn or beyond our job description. Yeah. And two, connecting with people has become more human than ever before. Even though access is much easier, you need to display a level of humanness to connect with someone. Sure, you're one message away from a LinkedIn to the CEO of company X, but you need to have a point to connect to them. Or how do you build that connection? And also I think volume has become a big challenge because people are getting so many messages, so many requests. So the goal is, Curiosity Center to connect that through education, where students come in and listen to guests and speakers. And then if there is a connection and there's an ability to connect, then the next step is you connect. And you connect through mentoring, coaching, and sort of connecting with one another. And the other kind of pillar to that is, how do you help solve some of the problems for companies and universities? So one of the big things is a lot of that is currently very transactional, right? Where if you think of it as a university, speakers come in and talk and then they leave their email, they leave a survey, and that's the end of it. And the student has 10 different lectures to go to, and they go to this in the middle of their day, or they go after uni where they frankly don't even want to be there, they just want a job, or they just want to get to their next class, or they want to get home on time so they can watch TV at home. So how do you build a community where people actually want to interact? And this is all lofty goals. I know it's really hard to build this kind of traction and do it, but I want to do it in a way where people want to enjoy coming to that and being involved in that. And it's not transactional, but it's actually productive for everyone involved and it's beneficial. So back to the university and corporates, one of the challenges they've got is, not challenges, but one of their key sort of KPIs is, how do you connect the university students to jobs? Right? How do you make the journey at university successful? So if I can be a kind of pathway to doing that through Curiosity Center, then great. And then the other one is, I think, coaching and mentoring. I've been fortunate through this. When you create something, you attract people, and I've been doing a bit of that on the side, is mentoring, coaching, whatever the word is, helping some students. And I want to do that more. And help them, whether it's to build something or turn an idea into reality or just general stuff. So those are some of the things that I hope to make some progress in 2022.
Oh, that sounds like a wonderful vision, mate. Like, and it's, I don't know, I'm just really excited to see where the journey goes. This has been amazing to witness so far. Thanks for sharing your vision on that. And I think I can speak for all of us, knowing that, you know, we're going to really love to see where you end up with this in the future. So now you've given us the vision. I want you to define a high flyer to us, all right? Because I think it's one of those descriptions of people that invokes a certain thought pattern or a certain image when people say high flyer. And I like that you're challenging that a bit. So in your own words, how do you define a high flyer?
It's probably worth giving a bit of context into why I chose the high flyer, and it was very intentional. And it goes to your point you just mentioned there. So when you hear the word high flyer, you associate that word with credibility, right? So straight away, someone, when they hear that, they're like, okay, this person's done something. This person's given some value, or they've solved the problem, or they've left a mark in some sort. So that's why I wanted to call it that. So initially, when the podcast had no brand, or even now when someone who hears it for the first time, I would hope the emotion they feel is of confidence in going, okay, this podcast will tell me something, or will teach me something, or will inform me or something. Whereas If you pick another name, you've got to explain yourself, and it's sort of tricky. That's one. What to me is a high flyer in very simplistic terms is anyone who is creating value or is solving a problem, and they're being better than they were yesterday. Simple as that. That could be anyone. It could be you're caring for your old parents and you're solving a problem and adding value. Could be you've come back from life-threatening injury and you are now recreating your life. Could be people like you who've moved countries as well and done it yourself and sort of taken a chance. Could be people in the business world. Nothing wrong with that. They're the kind of assumption we make when we think of high flyers, CEO and presidents. But what if the CEOs are not your typical CEOs of top 20 companies in the stock market? What if they are CEO of the world of Australia's biggest company trying to reduce food waste? Or what if, which is Brianna Casey, by the way, who had in the podcast. Or what if it's someone like Maddie Bushner, the CEO and founder of Little Dreamers, Australia's leading carer, young carer organization, helping young people be carers or helping young people have carers. Or what if someone that's had a life-threatening injury like Ben Kendi and he's now in a wheelchair, but he's the happiest person alive and I lived with him for a year and he inspired me every day and he still does. And that's a high flyer. So those are some of the examples, and I think people have really resonated with that and appreciated that. I must admit, I do have a lot of self-consciousness when I use that word. I always feel like I need to explain why I've chosen the name The High Flyer, and I've realized I actually don't need to explain it. People have understood it, and people are happy to associate themselves with it. And that to me is success, is people are comfortable associating their own name with the podcast and they don't feel like it's going to be taken in the wrong light.
I absolutely love that. I love, you defining it in your view and attracting, because some of the, like all of the people I've had on your podcast, maybe I'm questionable, but everyone else has been amazing. So it's really nice to hear, definitions, different definitions of success. Right? Because I think success has been defined a certain way in our society for a very long time. And you're looking at definitions of success that are different, that and equally, even not more, if not more important than how we've traditionally defined success. So I love that. That's the notion that the podcast is covering. You've touched on your guests as well. I was wondering, what are the, maybe if you were to pick two biggest lessons from your guests, what have you learned the most by speaking to all of these amazing people?
It's a really hard question, because when you do 50 episodes, there's so many learnings, and the challenge I always have is you don't want to have recency bias with the episodes that you've recorded recently. They're the ones that stick in your mind. I think one lesson, and this is a lesson I have interpreted, but I will share some specifics as well. One of the things that's something that I never realized is, even as at least early on, or even now, I have some people that I've known for a while. But when you have them on the podcast, you learn so much more than just their today, just what they do today.
Yeah.
Like I had, I'll give an example. I had Ben Jesse on in episode 4 or 5, and he's worked in the sports industry all around the world in really prominent roles, but just an awesome guy, lives in Melbourne now. And I've known him for a number of years, and I had no idea that he grew up in Hong Kong and then moved to Australia, went to boarding school, and his parents still live in Hong Kong. And that entire like first 20 years of his life, I had no idea, and I thought I knew this guy. Like, sure, he was a professional friend in a way, but still, I thought I knew this guy. And I always thought of him as like, yeah, he's just an Aussie bloke. I mean, lives in Melbourne. And that, to me, was an eye-opener early on, going, wow, people that I think I know, I don't. Another one example was Genevieve Hawkins. She was in episode 8 or 9. And again, one of my early mentors, she was one of my early mentors at Coles. She was the general manager of health and safety. And she was always very energetic. She still is very energetic, very bubbly, very life of the room kind of person. And I always just felt she was like that. I'm like, she's just like that, to what we spoke earlier, like introverted, extroverted. Some people are just extroverted. Yeah. And I asked her on the show, I said, Genevieve, you're very action-y, you're very energetic. Can you help me understand that? And she goes, I was the youngest, second youngest of 9 siblings.
Yeah, wow.
Right? So when you're second youngest of 9 siblings, you have to find a voice. And you have to find a way to create your identity. 9. So you don't, you're not high on that ladder. You're down below and you've got to find yourself. So the lesson there again was, yeah, just understanding the things. But I think a specific lesson that, that really stands out is one Holly said recently, Holly Ransom, that was on the show, and she used a phrase called nerves are selfish, right? Nerves are selfish. And then she said that when someone hears that, they're like, what are you talking about? Nerves are selfish? How the hell are nerves selfish? And so she's someone who speaks a lot at events, and she's interviewed some big personalities around the world. And she said, nerves are selfish because when you're nervous, you're thinking about yourself. You're thinking about how you present yourself. You're thinking about, oh, what am I going to say? But when you start thinking about, you start thinking outward about your audience, about how you're making the person you're interviewing feel, about what the event is about, then there's no reason to be nervous, right? Because it's not about you. It's about the people that are listening or attending. And it's about the person you're interviewing. It's about their life or a particular topic. You're just the person initiating that. And that's something I even thought about for this this conversation. I'm like, I was a bit anxious, and I'm like, yeah, nerves are selfish. And then that was a big learning. So, so I mean, yeah, there's many learnings, and I'm hoping over the coming months start kind of collating them into kind of easy to read learnings, perhaps. But those are some that stand out and that I can think of.
Oh, Fee, thanks for sharing that. It's been amazing listening to your conversations. And, you know, speaking about nerves are selfish, today I must confess that I was a little bit nervous because I'm not as natural an interviewer as you are, right? So, but I hope that, you know, the audience has gotten to know you a little bit better as well through this episode. And I think that's probably a segue into the final part of it, which is your final sprint. So the final sprint, rapid fire questions, try not to think about them too much. just get into it, have fun with them. So the first one is actually a question I'm going to steal from Tim Ferriss. And his question is, what is the best purchase you've made for under $100 this year?
Probably the AirPods. I mean, it sounds very trivial, but AirPods, I think just the convenience of it. Like, sorry, I can't think of anything, but that's probably one that that's improved my life,
Yeah, no, I like that because it is. It's just the little things that you get that, you know, that bring you joy or that, you know, like that add a little bit more value to your life, but you didn't spend a fortune kind of thing. Next one is you connect very well with people. What is your advice on how to best build meaningful rapport with strangers?
So one is, I talked about earlier, be yourself.
Nice.
And be human. Be human. I think one thing I was, someone gave me this piece of advice very early on is like, people hold titles, but people are people. Humans connect with humans, whether they're the president, whether they're the CEO, whether they're a university student. That's a title they're holding, but they're behind the title, they're a human. So if you treat them like a human, they will connect. And I think maybe the secret sauce, so to speak, that I think I have used with connecting with so-called high flyers, I think is value them for their humanness. And I think people have probably appreciated that because I think a lot of people value them for their title and for what they can get out of them. But I really do, and I tell people all the time, but people don't believe me. I say I catch up people just to learn from them. Often I don't want anything. If something, there's a byproduct in 6-12 months, great. But the initial attraction and the ongoing attraction is always to want to learn from them and ask them questions and kind of unpack their life a bit. And I think it doesn't always work, but it seems to work more often than not.
I love that answer. That's great. And if you went back in time and met yourself, let's say, 3 years ago, what advice would you give yourself?
That was a really interesting time period. So 3 years ago would be 2018, if my maths is right. That was actually a very interesting time in my life where I think I was going through a lot of change and I learned a lot about myself. The biggest thing I'll say is I think I was looking at ambition as this thing that was running out of time. Mm. And I wanted to hit this star called ambition ASAP. Mm. Hit it yesterday. And it came across in my behavior, came across in the way I portrayed myself, came across in my mental health. And I didn't realize it at the time, but someone told me midway through 2018, and it was a shock to the system. I was like, wow. And I think since then I've become a lot, I mean, I still have ambition, sure, but I think it's a lot more controlled ambition and it's a lot calmer and it's a lot more aware of my surroundings. And back to some of the things I said earlier about treating people like humans and not wanting to just take something from someone. That'd probably be the biggest advice I would give to that Vidit in 2018.
That's absolutely beautiful. I love that. And final one, brother. What do you do for fun? All right. Tell the audience what shenanigans you get up to.
What do I do for fun? I think for fun, just sometimes watch junk TV. I think that's always nice for fun. I think I'm one of those people, as you know, who always wants to be productive and always wants to use every second of my time for something, but then I get to the evening and I'm just cooked. So I think junk TV is something I enjoy every now and then. Seriously, the gym, as funny as it sounds, to me is fun because I can really switch off. I'm someone who struggles with switching off. The only two times I can switch off is the gym and when I'm sleeping. I can't switch off otherwise. I think that to me is fun. And travel. I want to travel again now that the world's opening up. I mean, that's obviously fun and you've got to take time out to do that. Yeah. But that's something I enjoy is travel, go to new places, meet new people. That's fun.
Well, V, I've thoroughly enjoyed this, brother. This has been totally fun. Thank you for having me. As you can tell, I'm not as natural an interviewer as you, but I hope that, you know, as I said before, the audience has gotten the chance to get to know you a little bit better. I appreciate you and keep doing your thing, man. You're making the world a really, really a lot lighter, you know, and I'm super proud of you. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you for agreeing to do this. And I must say to the listeners, I did not get any of these questions. I was a bit unsure about what I'm going to be asked today, but I thought it'd be along these parts, but I didn't know exactly what. But no, thank you for being a huge part of my life. I think I say I'm always interested in people, how they look at life, how they go about life, how they approach life, how they think. I think there's a lot of things that you do that keeps me in check and then reminds me of things. And I think, I think I said earlier, be a good person. I think you're a perfect example of being a good person. Sometimes you're too nice, but I think in general, you're a good person and you see the good in people. And I'm trying to do more of that. Episode 50.
Episode 50, man.
Still doesn't sit right yet.
Man, that is, it's epic. Now, thank you, brother, for everything that you're doing. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to hear some amazing people out there that wouldn't have been able to listen to, you know. So thank you so much. Keep doing your thing, and we're really excited to see the journey.
I hope you took away some actionable insights and learnings from this conversation to apply to your lives and be 1% better every day. And I look forward to sharing the next episode with you next Tuesday. Stay tuned.